History of the Crusades. Episode 262, The Baltic Crusades, The Samogitian Crusade, Part 3, Grand Master Karl von Trier. Hello again. Last week we saw the opening battles in the Samogitian Crusade, battles fought not against the Samogitians, but between the Prussian chapter of the Teutonic Order, under Commander Heinrich von Plotzka, and the Lithuanians, under their Grand Duke Vytenis. The goal of the Teutonic Order in the last episode was not to secure Samogitia, but to target a Lithuanian town located in the upper reaches of the Namunas River, the town of Gardanas. We saw at the end of last week's episode that, following the death of Grand Master Siegfried, a new Grand Master was appointed, Grand Master Karl von Trier, and Grand Master Karl's focus will see the Order cease its attacks on Gardanas and instead revert to the original plan to secure Samogitia as the first step towards eventually subduing Lithuania. Firstly, though, we should ask ourselves, who was this new player on the scene, Grand Master Karl? Well, William Urban points out that Grand Master Karl was only 46 years old when appointed to the position of Grand Master, and handily for dealing with a French Pope, he was fluent in both French and Latin. Shortly after he arrived in Prussia to take up his position, he did a quick tour of the Order's holdings in Prussia, then devised a new strategy for the Order's military campaigns. Determining that Livonia was the Order's priority, not Lithuania, he suspended the attacks on Gardanas and instead stipulated that securing Samogitia and re-establishing the land corridor between Prussia and Livonia was the Order's new primary goal. To that end, in April of 1313, the Grand Master sent a fleet of ships loaded with supplies from Königsberg to the entrance of the Namunas River, and sent ground forces overland to Ragnit. Unfortunately, the sea crossing from Königsberg along the coastline to the river mouth was filled with much drama and danger, with the result that four Teutonic knights, 400 soldiers, and a good deal of supplies and a load of building materials were all lost at sea. The ships which made it to the Namunas River, however, sailed 30 miles up the river, disembarked, then started work on building a castle made from logs and rammed earth that the Grand Master intended to use as a base for his raids into the Samogitian heartland. He named the castle Christmamel. While the building of Christmamel Castle was underway, Heinrich von Plotzka took a force further upriver to attack some small Samogitian strongholds, while simultaneously the castellan from Ragnit Castle sailed upriver, intending to attack the Samogitian stronghold of Vilan, which was located on the banks of the river. The castellan's ship was an impressive warship, but it was a little difficult to control. When they approached Vilan Castle, the ship was hit by an unexpected gust of wind, which drove the vessel onto the shore. The noise of the unexpected landing and the chaos on board as the men tried to get the ship back under control totally destroyed any chance of the army disembarking from the ship unseen, so Instead of attacking the castle, the men from Ragnit were forced to fend off attacks on their ship by the Samogitians as they struggled to get it back off the riverbank and into deeper water. They eventually succeeded and hastily turned the warship around and sailed back downstream to Ragnit. The appearance of the warship so far up the Namunas River was a huge concern to the Lithuanian Grand Duke Vytenis. Realizing that the warship had the potential to be able to transport armies to any Samogitian stronghold on the lower reaches of the river, he drew himself up a new list of priorities. On top of that list of priorities was to take an army to Ragnit with the goal of finding and destroying the warship. Vytenis quickly mustered 100 cavalrymen and ordered them to ride to Ragnit as fast as possible. He also launched around 100 small boats from the upper reaches of the Namunas River. Each boat contained 6 Lithuanian fighters who were ordered to scoot downriver as quickly as possible to Ragnit. The first part of the plan went really well. The little boats rocketed down the river so quickly that the Latin Christian scouts who spotted them as they shot past had no chance to ride to Ragnit to warn of their coming. So the little boats all safely reached Ragnit without having been intercepted. The second part of the plan also worked well. To their delight, the Lithuanians discovered the warship moored in the middle of the river near Ragnit, along with only 4 archers on board to protect it. Then the plan went totally sidewards. The warship was huge, and the Lithuanians found that it was impossible to climb up the sides of the ship. Those who attempted to do so were immediately targeted by the archers. Things would have been even more grim if the Lithuanian cavalrymen hadn't turned up at Ragnit just in time to divert the Latin Christians from sending reinforcements over to the warship. The Lithuanians scratched their heads for a while, sailing around the huge ship in their tiny boats, wondering what to do, when someone had the bright idea of slicing through the ship's mooring rope. The rope was cut, and the ship, freed from its anchor, drifted downstream, followed by the cheering Lithuanians in their 100 little boats. Eventually, the ship ran aground, where it was promptly set on fire and destroyed by the Lithuanians. Woohoo! It seemed like the Lithuanians were on a winning streak. When Heinrich von Plertzka led a large army into Lithuania in 1314, he discovered, to his horror, that the huge underground bunker of supplies he had stored inside Lithuania in anticipation of this particular military campaign had been discovered by the Lithuanians and had been destroyed. The bunker must have been pretty impressive. It was fully stocked with food and other supplies, and even contained 500 fresh horses. It had been guarded by a small contingent of Prussian soldiers, but the castellan of Gardenas Castle had discovered the supply post, killed the guards, stolen the horses, and had destroyed the rest of the supplies. Then he ordered his men to retreat from the plundered bunker. When Heinrich von Plertzka and his army discovered the empty supply post, he must have had one of those sick in the pit of your stomach feelings. 2 realizations must have made themselves clear to him pretty quickly. The first being he now had no way to feed his large and hungry army, and no fresh horses to supply them with. Secondly, it meant that the Lithuanians were probably waiting nearby, ready to ambush Heinrich von Plötzke and his forces. The marshal of the Prussian forces decided that his men were too hungry to put up any real resistance to an attack, so the only way forward was to retreat back to Prussia, taking a tortuous 500-mile-long route which would ensure that his men made it out of Lithuania without encountering any Lithuanians. Heinrich von Plötzke was in fact correct. The 500-mile-long detour did mean that they avoided any Lithuanian fighting men, but making a 500-mile-long journey on tired horses with no food is never a good idea, and towards the end of the trek, many men were forced to eat their horses or to scavenge for roots and plants in the forests. A lot of men ended up dying of starvation before they made it back to Prussia. As William Urban points out, the castellan of the castle at Gardenas, by emptying the supply depot, nearly managed to destroy an entire Prussian army without even firing a shot. In August of 1315, the Samogitians led an attack on Ragnat Castle. However, finding the keep of the castle all but impregnable, they contented themselves with setting fire to nearby crops and farm buildings before withdrawing. 6 weeks later, Vitenus launched an impressive attack on Christ Mamel Castle. Bringing with him 2 catapult machines and a contingent of Russian archers, Vitenus's plan was to pile enormous amounts of wood all around the castle, then set fire to it. The plan being that the smoke would force an evacuation, or that the heat caused by the fire would crack and weaken the castle walls. The Lithuanian forces surrounded the castle, besieged it, then busied themselves cutting wood and collecting anything else which was flammable. As soon as Grand Master Karl heard about the siege, he began gathering his forces. Worried about how long it would take before his large army was ready to mobilize, he sent an advance party of 10 knights and 150 soldiers ahead on ships. Vitenus was able to keep the ships from reaching the castle. However, on the 17th day of the siege, his scouts advised him that the Grand Master's army was approaching. Vitenus sprang into action. He ordered the stockpiles of wood and other flammable material to be carried to the moat. Thousands of Lithuanians complied, running in with armfuls of wood, while the Russian archers did their best to keep the crossbowmen from Christ Mamel away from the walls. However, Christ Mamel had been designed to protect its archers. Well concealed behind the castle's crenellations, the crossbowmen fired repeatedly at the wood-laden Lithuanians, mowing down so many of them that Vitenus ordered the attack to be stopped. He set fire to the Lithuanian catapult machines, then retreated. Unfortunately, Vitenus vanishes from history at this point. He is never heard of again in the Crusader accounts, and the next time the Latin Christians face off against the Lithuanians, there is a new leader in place, a man called Gediminas. William Urban reports that early histories of the region stated that Vitanus died after having been struck by lightning, but later historians have all but dismissed this account. So, the great Lithuanian leader and warrior Vitanus departs the scene at this stage of our narrative due to causes unknown. Back at Krismamel, Grandmaster Karl found himself inside Samogitia with a very large army. Deciding to make the most of this opportunity, he dismissed most of his men, ordering them to return to Prussia, but retained 6,000 of them, ordering them on a night march further up the Namunas River to the Samogitian stronghold of Wieland. Apparently, although the Latin Christians had the element of surprise on their side and managed to approach the castle totally unseen, 6,000 men was deemed an insufficient force to mount an assault on the stronghold itself. So, much like the recent Samogitian attack on Ragnet Castle, the Prussians didn't attempt to breach the castle walls, but instead laid waste to anything and everything around the castle, destroying crops, farms, houses, and food stores before retreating. In fact, William Urban reports that attacks by the Latin Christians on Wieland Castle became a regular event, with the castle, or more accurately, the land and buildings surrounding the castle, being targeted at least once a year. Wieland was central to the Samogitian control of the lower reaches of the Namunas River, and to achieve their goal of controlling the river, the Teutonic Order needed to see the castle either destroyed or abandoned. Destroying the castle would have been a major undertaking, but regular raids designed to destroy crops which were needed to supply the garrison with food meant that the Lithuanians were forced to step in and resupply the castle themselves to prevent it from being abandoned by the Samogitians. The Latin Christians hoped that, if they were thorough in their efforts to ensure that the Lithuanians would be required, season after season, to go to the expense and inconvenience of resupplying the Samogitian castle, then maybe the Lithuanians would tire of this and the castle would be abandoned. Now, around this time, in the years 1315 to 1316, Grandmaster Karl travelled to the Rhineland to try and recruit some more crusaders. His attempts were successful, but it seems that these crusaders were a new type of crusader. People who were looking to travel to Prussia and then on to Samogitia less out of spiritual obligation and more out of the desire for a sort of adventure holiday. Grandmaster Karl seemed to realise this and may have marketed the Crusades accordingly. In his book The Samogitian Crusade, William Urban reports that, along with venturing out of civilised Prussia into the wilds of the Samogitian forests and killing as many pagan Samogitians as they could lay their hands on, a highlight of each Crusader expedition was the lavish ceremony which awaited the Crusaders when they returned to Prussia. Any squires who performed valiant and brave deeds on the Samogitian battlefield were ceremoniously dubbed as knights by the most prominent nobleman present. To take the spectacle to new levels, Grandmaster Karl created the Table of Honour, modelled on the Round Table of the Legends of King Arthur, and Any man who performed particularly well against the Samogitians was invited to dine at the table alongside the Grand Master. I guess it's not surprising that crusading to Samogitia became quite popular after this, with crusaders visiting ever more frequently, the squires all itching to prove themselves on the battlefield and return as fully fledged knights, and the fighting men all hoping to distinguish themselves enough to score an invitation to a coveted position on the table of honour. We will leave Prussia, Samogitia, and Lithuania there for a while, with the Prussians and Crusaders attacking Samogitian strongholds along the lower reaches of the Namunas River, with the new Lithuanian leader, Gediminas, busying himself consolidating his rule and getting ready to make some surprise moves. Next week, we return to Livonia, where enough years have passed that Pope Clement is finally in a position to hear Archbishop Friedrich's complaint against the Knights of the Livonian chapter of the Teutonic Order. Until next week, bye for now. This podcast is powered by Patreon. If you can spare $1 per month and would like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com and search for History of the Crusades, or go to our website, crusadespod.com, and click on the Patreon link. Your $1 contribution will mean you get access to an extra episode every fortnight on topics related to the Crusades, and it means that you are powering the History of the Crusades podcast. Thank you to all who have signed up so far.
Sanctus, Sanctus.